Welcome, friends, to the Someone Gets Me podcast. I am your host, Diane Allen, and I am so delighted that you're here. This podcast was created because I believe there is a visionary leader inside each one of us who is waiting to be seen. In each episode of Someone Gets Me, you will hear useful tips from successful visionaries who will share their stories about how being seen has allowed them to take their vision out into the world with action.
Welcome, friends. It's Diane here with a great interview for you today here on Someone Gets Me. I have with us from Seattle, Washington, a very good person who I just met, who I could already call my really good friend. It's like we were sisters before we even knew it. It was just the funnest time meeting her. Her name is Melanie Gillespie, and she is a powerhouse. She's not only well-educated with a master's in business and has run all kinds of great companies. Besides all that, and in addition to all that, she specializes in helping gifted women not burn out so much and have a better life and live in their groove. And she does a lot of other amazing things too. She's just really fun. And so I have with us today on the show this really amazing woman. And I'm going to put the rest of her bio in the show notes for you to read, because she is well educated and well versed and completely dedicated to making this world a better place in a really fun and groovy way. So Melanie Gillespie, who's on the show with us, is the chief multi-galactic ass kicker for Off the Map, which is the name of her company. And she lives where the dragons are. So she's going to have to tell us about that, because I think that is amazing. And when I met her at Sing, we hit it off right away. And the thing that most struck me about her was her authenticity and her honesty and her desire to engage with people in a real way to bring forward amazing, great things into this world. And so I came away from Sing this year with a lot of hope. Much more hope than sometimes other years. And Melanie is a very big part of that. So I asked her to come on the show and she graciously said yes. And so welcome to the show, Melanie.
Yay. Gosh, thank you so much, Diane. What a fantastic introduction. I'm going to like hire you as my new PR person. This is so much fun. I'm so excited to be here and talking to your peeps and talking to you. It's so awesome. I love what I'm doing, helping gifted women, and we'll talk all about that. But what I want to first say to everybody who's listening is I want to tell you that the world needs what you have. The world needs your magic, and it needs you to play big, and you need to know how to play big without losing your mind. And that's my mission on this planet.
That is perfect. And I tell everybody not to play small. So see, we're saying the same message.
Right. Yeah. Like since I was a kid, my kind of personal motto was go big or go home, baby.
That's right. That's exactly it. I love it. So tell us about the dragons. I want to know about the dragons.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So I named my company Off the Map because of those kind of the ancient sort of vintage maps where for seafaring, right? Where they would have them around the edges of the map. They'd have like crazy little drawings and images, and they would say, here be dragons, right? And so it's like the part of the map that's like scary to the rest of the world and nobody knows what's there. And if you go there, you'll fall off the edge or some dragon or monster is going to like eat you alive. That's my happy place. It's always been my happy place. And I bet that, you know, I bet this is also true about you, Diane, and many of the folks listening, where you're kind of often sort of ahead of the curve or out of step in your head and people can't catch up with you. We're like off the map. That's all. And it's just awesome there. And for me, dragons are, so I'm going to just get super vulnerable for a minute, right? You build me as authentic. So here it comes. Part of my experience, kind of spiritually, I consider myself a solitary esoteric mystic. And part of my experience has been to have a lot of guidance from dragons and a lot of kind of love and support from dragons, kind of in that, you know, other realm kind of experience that many of us have. And I just love everything about their energy and their wisdom, and they're awesome and amazing, super powerful, wise allies in many ways. So that's part of the dragons anyway.
I love that story. And while you're talking, it just hit me. My hero is Figment of your imagination. He's a purple dragon.
Oh my God, that's great. I love it. Oh. I love it. Is that, and I don't know, Figment, is that something you made up? Or no, is that like a character from something?
Figment is a character designed by Disney. And Disney here has Epcot, which stands for Experimental Prototype Community of Tomorrow. It's in Orlando, Florida.
Yeah, I know Epcot, sure.
And they have the Land of Imagination. And mm-hmm. the character for the Land of Imagination is Figment. And he's a purple dragon who flies. And the song is one of the things that pulled me out of a great depression when I was in a teen, when I was a teenager, when I went on that ride. And I've loved Figment ever since. And I actually have Figment statues in my garden I was just hanging out with before this interview. And he's a flying dragon and he's fun. Cool. And he teaches people about their imagination. So there you go. We have more in common.
That's fantastic. You know, one of like a really important song from my childhood, you know, just pinging off of what you just said there, is the song from the original Willy Wonka with Gene Wilder, or Charlie and Chocolate Factory with Gene Wilder, the song Imagination.
Yes.
Living in a world of pure imagination. Love it.
That's perfect. I love it too. So I'd like to start a little bit with who is Melanie? Like, you are obviously didn't just land, even though you've always been off the map. As far as you as a professional person and an adult, you've had a journey somehow to get here. And I would like you to share a little bit about that road. What's it been like for you? How are you received? What kinds of events or experiences that you feel led to share about the journey that has brought you to this amazing place right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for asking. So I'm going to like interweave a little bit of personal from the beginning, and then I'm going to just like, you know, grab the key points that I think would be interesting to others, right? You know, so, you know, as a gifted woman, I know we're all here because we're gifted. As a gifted child and teen, I didn't have any of the kind of like important social emotional supports that we know are so important now, as most of us, the case for most of us. And I was in kind of skipped grades, did that whole kind of model, which created a lot of challenges emotionally, right? But also some opportunities. Anyway, I graduated from my undergrad at Columbia, and then I was kind of aimless for a little while. So I consider myself to be a late bloomer in many ways. And I think that's an important thing to share and to own, instead of maybe in the past where I would be ashamed of that and kind of gloss over it, because it can be really true and really common, particularly I think for gifted folks, around like trying to figure out like, how do I make all this work for me? Like, what is the story? What's happening? A little bit kind of raised by wolves, or, you know, self-raised also. So there's kind of that component. So the late bloomer piece for me was really, there was an assumption about I would go into academia and in literature and, you know, write brilliant but obscure treatises on things that maybe I was passionate about, but it might not move the world. And what I came to understand when I figured out, oh, I don't want to go to grad school for that, was that I want to be in the world. Like, I have a passion to be in the world, to make a difference. I didn't really understand what any of that meant. So my kind of like some of my earliest professional experiences that I think are hilarious are when I was 18, still in college, but, you know, in the summertime, I sold encyclopedias door to door. That was an interesting experience, right? And so for those of you who might be a little older, you might remember Encyclopedia Americana, like decent product, right? But I learned pretty quickly that it was really the kind of icky financing package that was being sold. So I had to get out of that. But it was a really fascinating experience, alongside with doing a lot of kind of canvassing for social justice issues. And so that was more door-to-door stuff. So that was kind of interesting. And it kind of led me into various sort of marketing and promotional work before I really kind of figured out, got started on my real path. And that was really cool. But I did very well and would get promoted and was making a lot of money. But I was miserable. And I didn't understand that it was because I didn't believe in what I was promoting. I wasn't excited about it. And I felt in some cases like it was like not a cool thing in the world, like not okay ethically. Like test prep, paid test prep programs was a big thing that I was involved in. And I felt like this is just gaming the system. And why don't the kids who don't have access to the money have the same resource? So anyway, so I kind of went the other way and I went into nonprofit work. And I basically took like the biggest salary cut you can imagine, because I was just trying to talk myself into any kind of work at all. I had no qualifications to be there. It was totally ridiculous. I talked myself in at a young age into a housing director job, working with homeless single moms with their kids with them, and kind of dealing with you know, just the homelessness, the employment, domestic violence, chemical dependency, adult and child survivors of sexual abuse, et cetera, all the things you can imagine that go along with that. In an agency doing really cool wraparound services with mental health counseling and all of that stuff. And so that was kind of where I grew up professionally, was in that environment. And it was a trial by fire environment where the board was in the process of firing the executive director that had just hired me. I didn't know what I was doing. There had been 5 people in the same job as me in the last 12 months. So that tells you a little bit about what's going on. The organization was in an audit, and HUD was trying to take back all the housing money because there had been just like such screw ups. It wasn't like a fraud thing. It was just total screw up over time. And if any of you out there have ever worked with HUD or federal grant money, you know, you have to like work really hard to get them to actually take money back. Like that's like, you really got to screw up. So anyway, I spent every night in the library at the local university learning about what are the needs of homeless single moms in various ways, like research and literature and all of that, and talking to different professors on campus about it. And I didn't understand in the early 90s that this wasn't something that was generally happening. It seemed to just make sense to me. And it taught me a really important lesson later, that, you know, kind of learning what the key pieces are, kind of bringing the different disparate disciplines together and designing program work and supporting experts in their work from that place makes it so much easier in so many different ways. And I also learned that a little bit of naivete goes a long way. And this is a lesson that I've carried forward intentionally and that I occasionally bring forward when I'm in mentoring roles as well. Because when you're a little bit naive about what can be done because you don't understand it, but you kind of are creating a mental model and trying to learn what it is, you don't have the same limits as other people. So I created, through that job and others that came later, programs that were award-winning, that were nationally replicated, that really kind of, you know, pushed the edges around that. And that was fantastic in kind of my early years of doing that kind of program design, oversight, management, running agencies, fundraising, grants, systems, operations, all of that, that were all really direct service focused. And then later on, I really became obsessed with the idea of how do we have more? I'm going to go back because to get this right, because I think this is going to be important to a lot of people, because I think a lot of people are now really doing this. And it was at the time, nobody had words for it. And that was the challenge for me. But this is like around 99, 2000. I was really obsessed with the idea of business models, like for-profit business models, where the exogenous variables, the external variables that are driving profit, are by definition necessarily also creating a positive good, a social change, a norm change, a behavior change that's important. Because what I learned from trying to apply academic and literature and research and data into program services very quickly was that people in general, and I think this is true in every component, we don't necessarily want what we might need, right? And we've learned this in various kinds of norm change campaigns, like around tobacco and smoking, et cetera, that, you know, giving people data doesn't change it. Giving them free access to what they need doesn't change things for them in their experience, right? What changes people is, what do they want? What's their emotion that pulls them forward, right? That kind of vibrational energy piece that we talk about. But back then I just was focused on like, people want what they want, and how do you nestle what they need inside it in a useful, palatable way so that later they're like, oh, I also got this thing too. How awesome. But the academic community has a hard time with how to make that happen, right? How to kind of teach that or make that compelling. And I think the nonprofit and public sector still struggles with that mightily to this day. So I was interested in, okay, we live in an economy that is driven by money. I don't love that, but I'm a pragmatic idealist. So like, let's make some things happen. We can change norms, social norms. And I've always been here to kind of change the norms, break the paradigms that aren't working, and kind of uplift the world in some way, as I know all of you are as well. We can get more kind of eyeballs, to use marketing speak, by using sort of a profit model that will be forced by definition of what it's there to do, make profit, to grow and expand and reach more people, to sort of slingshot some of these kind of nestles, some of the what we need in the world out there. And an example I'd give you from back in the day was the baby Bjorn, which was something that nobody in America was doing. Nobody was carrying their babies. They went into little like you know, car seats that we carried around. They went into strollers. They were in cribs in different rooms from us. We didn't hold our babies. And we know categorically from huge volumes of literature over many, many decades that what babies and moms both need when the babies are little is to be held and touched and loved. And we need that connectedness because we're social animals. And so Baby Bjorn comes in at the top of the market as sort of a, like kind of Tiffany branding luxury item, the it present to get at baby showers. And this is how I know about it, because I happened to, in the mid 90s when it was coming into America, go in on a couple of different baby shower presents with literally like four other people to pay for this Baby Bjorn with little scraps of fabric to attach the baby to your chest, you know, as if women all over the globe haven't been doing this for thousands of years. You got to love the Western world sometimes, right? And of course, then because it's a top of the line item, it's a luxury item, everybody wants it because it's hot and hip and in. So then it becomes popular and then you get the knockoffs, right? And then now you can walk into any sort of Babies R Us anywhere in the country and pick up something to attach the baby to you for 15 bucks. And more importantly, you know, even as early as late 90s or 2000s, you'd walk around and you'd see dads are carrying babies, brothers and uncles are carrying babies, all sorts of different women are carrying babies. The babies are totally being carried. But it wasn't because somebody sold them the idea if this is good for you and your baby's development. It was because they figured out people want more free time and they want their hands free, right? So I couldn't figure out how to get into that. So I went to business school and I got an MBA and I pestered all of my professors about this. And they were like, who let the crazy nonprofit chick in? Why do we always have to have one of those? Right? Like, you know, and anyway, and so kind of, you know, fast forwarding through that, I had some different experiences where I was kind of building up intentionally certain kinds of skill sets or credibility on my resume, like managing large capital budgets for kind of capital development projects in various ways, building affordable housing, building community facilities, early risky pre-development loan funds, public infrastructure in low and moderate income neighborhoods. And I got recruited to help start up a really unique affordable homeownership opportunity that a group of folks, volunteer board, had put together that they felt like was the first opportunity to truly scale affordable low-income homeownership without the need for grant funds, because that's always the limiting factor in all this stuff. And so that was exciting. And they also wanted to create, and this was the big lure for me, basically a triple bottom line social impact investing fund that would return profits to the investors, would build green housing, like urban infill green housing, and would, you know, create this homeownership opportunity for low and moderate income households, coupled with a 2-year financial and homeownership literacy program that I developed for them. So that was awesome. We got it all set up. We got it started. We launched it. And a month later was when the mortgage market started to crash. And a few months after that was when we had the big recession kind of came in and hit and slammed everything and shut a bunch of stuff down. So that was the first time in my life that I ever really felt like I experienced failure. And it was awful. It was like so traumatic. And I just was like, I'm a failure. I can't believe I failed. This is like, I don't take no for an answer. I'm a Capricorn. You know, we're stubborn, you know, as heck. I won't swear here because, you know, that can offend people, but I might occasionally use a different word there. But, you know, we're stubborn and I don't take no for an answer, which I've rebranded as positive persistence. And anyway, but I, you know, would learn some really important lessons from that and kind of like licked my wounds and came back in and was sort of, you know, running organizations again where we could really get back into shifting the social norms. The last 5 years before I broke out on my own, I was running a foundation that was rebranded after 40 years under my leadership, into this incredible organization that was focused on creating enduring health equity. And we were creating these incredible conferences and gatherings and think tanks, among other things that we were doing around essentially how do we bring together the social determinants of health and kind of the issues of why our zip code should not determine our health, right? Coupled with, and all the public health system pieces of that, coupled with the sciences that teach us about flourishing and toxic stress. So neuroscience, epigenetics, adverse childhood experiences, resilience, hope theory. We actually called these events the science of hope and branded this kind of bundle of science as the neurosciences. And it was super amazing. And we were also deeply involved in the implementation of healthcare reform here in Washington State, really kind of moving the needle really rapidly in a lot of fun ways. But after 5 years, it really became time, you know, kind of even that container just wasn't working anymore for me. And it was time for me to branch out on my own. My kind of hashtag for this is like CEO for others, right? When you're running other people's stuff, and even though you're a big component of creating and managing and leading the vision, in some ways, the vision is not entirely your own thing, right? Mm-hmm. And there's also, you know, one of the things that I really address a lot, I work specifically with gifted women. And I focus on that particularly. I often have men approach me, and I've worked with men and I love it, but there's a layer around kind of the subtle and not so subtle sexism that women experience in various kinds of leadership roles, which I tend to kind of draw in sort of the badass women. Or professional creatives is kind of the other group that I tend to draw in, where, you know, just this is a part of their experience that needs to be both honored, and they need like specific tactical advice and training on how to deal with. And so I was just tired of dealing with that myself, right? I just didn't want to work for anybody else. I was going to turn 50 and I was like, yeah, I'm not working for anybody else ever again. I've got this big vision. I'm going to make it happen. So I'm talking a lot, but I'm almost done. And now I'm here, right? So like I, you know, really did a lot of personal internal work and like personal meditative and spiritual time to figure out what is the highest, best use of me in the world. And that's been kind of an important value of mine for a long time, is what is the highest, best use of anybody's time? I jokingly refer to it as my land use policy for people. And, you know, because like I said at the beginning, the world needs what we have. And it needs us to play big, and we need to know how to play big without losing our minds. So, okay, I'm going to get into that. I'm going to do that. And pretty quickly honed in on really where kind of my zone of particular magic for now is really focused on the gifted woman and, you know, helping the gifted women kind of leap out of overwhelm, apathy, despair, burnout. I kind of sum that all up in the "is this all there is-itis," right? That the gifted person can really have that experience in their professional career as a result of just a variety of different variables we could talk about or not, but really kind of getting the brain and spirit, nervous system kind of all regulated, and the person kind of learning how to be at peak performance for each of those levels. And when you've been able to have all three of those levels, nervous system, brain, and spirit, kind of maximized and optimized, then you can really get into this experience of life that I call kind of the groove life. And, you know, in the groove, a gifted woman can find that her giftedness includes deeply intuitive and spiritual gifts. She can move past that old reality of being too sensitive, master energetic safety, and reclaim a sacred magic. There's also the way in which we can align our income generating strategies so that they essentially become kind of this perfect kind of natural byproduct of like what we're here to do. And basically just like having way more fun, right? Like freedom, prosperity, joy, fully manifested purpose, you know, all of that is what we really all seek. That finding your purpose piece, I would say, is one of the kind of the key nuggets that I think can drive burnout. For me, burnout is fundamentally a betrayal of your core essence. So kind of reconnecting to that is critical. And, you know, within core essence is really what is our true purpose. I'm sure many of the folks here had sort of the same experience that I had of, as I got older and was sort of like, oh, now you're an adult and you have to do the grown-up stuff. It's like, but wait, where's this whole like magical true potential thing that everybody used to say to me, that if I just applied myself or worked harder, I would be able to have my true potential? And, you know, so, but, and that's just this mysterious thing nobody unpacks for us. And so that's a really potent, fun part of the journey when I'm working with women. So that's here. That's me. You asked, here I am. I hope that's not too much.
Oh, it's not too much at all. And it's so magical, because we made comments with each other when we were sang together at lunch and everything, how it's like we were these long lost sisters, and there's so much about us that's so similar in energy and in belief and all of those kinds of things. And I'm listening to you and I'm going, yes, uh-huh, yes, great. Yeah. And so I really honor you, because one of the things that I'm really getting clearly is that you allow your inner passion and vision to show up in all of its authority. And that takes a lot of guts. in this culture, and it takes a lot of tenacity and focus and willingness. And I know lots of people, and I'm sure there's people listening to the podcast who are probably listening to you and saying, yeah, but that's her. And that's how she's always been. And she's, you know, landed here. And so what I'd like, maybe if we could talk a little bit about some of the things you've had to do in your own life to manage the fact that you're this strong visionary woman that is way ahead of her time, which is, you know, exactly what gifted people do and visionary people are. That's the nature of it. And what have you had to do over the time to manage all of this and yet keep going? And have you ever been disappointed or discouraged besides the part besides the part with the reception, economic crash and reception, because that wouldn't you, but I mean, like other times, how do you handle that?
Totally. But first I just want to say, like, Diane, how much I have just, like, right away when I first met you, like immediately before there were even words, I was like, oh, you, right? Like it was totally like that for me as well. I just have to say that, like, and you're just so amazing in person. And I hope that everybody here listening gets a chance sometimes to be in person with you somehow. And this community that you're creating is just fantastic. So yeah. So thank you for your nice words about how I'm showing up here, but like, yeah, no, often. So there's a reason that I'm helping people with burnout. I've been there more than once and like clawed my way out of it. And I've had despair. I've had apathy and overwhelm. I've had the "is this all there is-itis?" Absolutely. And sure, like we have some sort of intrinsic pieces in us, but I truly believe and have experienced dozens and dozens and dozens of times that there isn't, that anybody can make this be true for themselves, that can have this kind of same, you know, kind of happiness and joy and excitement and, you know, ability to choose how to show up in an authentic and vulnerable way that's still safe for me, right? So I like boundaries is a key piece of what I teach and what I think is important, and my boundary journey has been huge for myself personally. Okay, so here's some stuff that I've experienced that might sound familiar to some folks that are listening. I have that gifted brain problem slash opportunity of the what I call the all the things. Our brain, we love all the things, right? Sometimes people talk about kind of gifted divergent, you know, as a type, and that's definitely at least one of mine. I haven't done a lot of thought about like all the different types and which one I am personally for myself, but this kind of like all the things, jumping around, putting together all the disparate ideas, needing to go down a rabbit hole, like that's like when it's fun. But that can quickly become not fun, right? And you can get yourself into a huge mess. And then you can get into that, you're stuck, you're, you know, overthinking, analysis paralysis. We see all the opportunities. I've been there many times. And so that, like, some of the kinds of like tactical ways that's looked for me is like stuffing my feelings with food. I had like a decades long obsession with the ways in which pasta and other kinds of carbs were the salvation for me when I didn't feel good, when I didn't feel emotionally good, when I didn't feel like I was enough, when I didn't feel like I was good enough. I had massive imposter syndrome from an early age and didn't understand what it was, didn't understand until very late in life that other people had this too, that I wasn't like the only one walking around going, they're gonna figure it out. They're gonna take all that away from me. I'm not good enough. I'm gonna fail in a moment. I'm gonna go too high and crash and burn. You know, so lots of challenges. One of the big things that really kind of helped kind of liberate me into like a new level actually was a huge health crisis. And I think this is common for a lot of people, but I want to talk about it just a little bit. So I had Lyme disease, and this is a controversial area in the medical world. And I'm not going to kind of engage with the controversial aspects of it. But I had Lyme disease that had been long undiagnosed. I had actual blood testing for those of you going, you didn't have Lyme disease. I did. And I had several other co-occurring diseases that went with it, Bartonella and a couple of others that are even lesser well known. And it took me years to come back from it. And I had to figure out how to deal with it and how to still work full time and run the organizations I was running and the teams that I was responsible to, that it was my job to take care of, while raising a child alone. It forced me into an immediate radical self-care regimen that I would never have done on my own. So And pretty quickly, even though it was awful and I wouldn't wish it on my own worst enemy, and it went on forever and ever, I quickly could see that opportunity, that's kind of silver lining piece. And I really encourage anybody who's sort of struggling with a big external circumstance that feels like it's just crushing you to take just one moment and think about what could be amazing about this, which can be kind of a heretical question in many circumstances. And there are many circumstances where, like, I don't think that applies. Like, I'm not a person who thinks everything happens exactly for a reason. I'm not, you know, the kid didn't die from cancer for a reason. Like, I'm not, that's not my approach. But at the same time, sometimes amazing things happen. Sometimes when the kid dies from cancer, people come together and they put together, you know, a multi-million dollar foundation to help other kids. That doesn't make it okay that the kid died from cancer. It doesn't change everybody's grief. But it's still sort of a thing that can happen. But for me in our personal lives, like that journey of that radical self-care, it's what made me open up to self-love. It's what made me open up to spirit, to the divine, to other realms. So it kind of started some of that. Most of my failures when I had them, the small ones that don't like rate at the Great Recession level, they happened because I overreached. And I had a vision for a thing and I didn't understand what it would take to make it happen. Because I think that what happens for us as gifted people, it's like when we have the vision for the thing, it pops into our mind or our spirit whole. Like we see the whole diamond is kind of the metaphor that I like to use. We see all of its facets simultaneously. Sometimes for some of us and in some circumstances, we actually see all the different facets all as one coming together completely, like forming magically simultaneously into the diamond. So we understand exactly how it works and how to put it together. And then the problem is that other people can't see the whole diamond. And when we try to explain it to them, they're like, well, that's stupid, or that's crazy, or I don't even know what you're talking about. Or, oh, there's Melanie off with another one of her crazy ideas. You know, oh, there's Melanie 10 steps ahead in a way that isn't useful, or whatever, right? And fill in the blank your name, because I'm sure I'm not alone in these experiences. I know from working with gifted women that this is common. And so then how do we kind of learn how to communicate with other people about the two or three facets of the diamond that are all they can see at that time in a way that makes it possible for them to kind of get it, get excited, get on board with that quote unquote vision, which for us is the smaller vision, but in an actionable way where they can be making things happen, because we all need to be able to feel the sense of progress and success that, you know, it's just part of the human need, right? So that's kind of a critical thing. Yeah.
It's an extremely critical thing. And I'm really glad that you brought that up. And because you're way ahead of your time and not everybody can see the picture. But I used to, you'll love this story. When I was in my 20s, I'm one of the visionary types. Like it'll pop in, the vision of whatever it is. Yeah. It'll pop in, completely whole, done. I know exactly how to do it. And so clear that there's no argument with it. And in my,
it's like already done because it doesn't even exist, right? It's like, it's already done. And it's like, all you have to do is like take a step to the left, as they might say in Rocky Horror Picture Show, and boom, you're in it.
Exactly. So then, and in my 20s and in my teens, especially, even though I knew I was gifted, I wasn't living it in the way I do now. And I didn't have the understanding and I didn't really have any support in processing any of it. And I just remember, and I was just talking about this earlier today. I remember when I was in my 20s, seeing a vision, and in my mind, it was done by lunch, like it'd be done already. and I would say something to other people, and they would look at me like I'd lost my mind and I was crazy. And I used to think that everyone did it the way I did it, and they were just being lazy.
Yeah.
It did not occur to me even a little bit that they couldn't see anything more than maybe one or two or no facets or any part of it. Like I just thought everybody could see it. I was so naive to that there were all these different realities. I just had no awareness at all. And I went through such a hard time. And then once I realized first that it comes in that hard, that fast, it takes about 2 years, it comes in about 2 years ahead of schedule. Mm-hmm. Now I know that. So when something drops in, I write it all down and I document it and I get on it and I go, okay, it's not lunchtime. It's not even a weekend project. It's probably not even going to happen by your birthday, Diane, but you know, it's going to show up eventually. And not everybody has that ability to see things like that. It was monumental. So I'm so glad you brought that up because I think that that's very common. I think it's very common. Then that's one of the things that creates depression in visionary people and gifted, whatever people want to call themselves, is because they can see it. And they get that existential depression because they can see it and they can even communicate it in their language, but somehow it's like it comes out of their mouth clear, but the other people are hearing Donald Duck or something. Like, they just aren't connecting to it.
Yeah. Well, and it is like a human, is our one of our core human needs. Like, we come into this world with the need and the right, is our birthright, to be seen completely for exactly all of who we are and to be loved unconditionally, which is what the universe or God or divine or source or love, whatever your mental model is for that, does for us. But we want that from each other. And much of our pain comes from not experiencing that. And the modern world for the last couple thousand years isn't set up for most of the even well-intentioned parents to actually provide any of that. But for us as humans, as we're growing up and people don't see us because they can't see our vision and they don't see, you know, this is like, that's like the underlying kind of even sort of like even deeper existential pain. That's so important. But I want to really like tactically, logically kind of link back, not logically, but tactically link back to what you were saying about how when you think people are lazy, right? This is actually one of the critical reasons why what that I see in gifted women who are in like leadership positions, why they cap out, why they hit ceilings and can't get promoted and then kind of have failure in an organization and maybe have to jump to another job to get a similar, you know, level of responsibilities and maybe over time kind of get knocked down. And it's because they haven't figured this out, that not everybody is capable of what they're capable of, and that the expectations they're putting on their own teams and on their coworkers and even on their bosses are unrealistic. Because just statistically speaking, there's not going to be a lot of people that you're interacting with in your workplace that are going to have your capacity for this, right? And so like, they're not lazy, and we get frustrated, right? And we kind of express this, and even if we don't express it in words, we express it in our attitude and our behavior and our kind of stance and our energetics. Teams lose their kind of morale because they can't make progress and they don't understand what's going on because we keep just sort of like, oh, and then this thing, and then this thing, and oh, and then this thing, you know, and we're excited about it. And they're like, oh, I don't even understand what she's talking about. Or why is she always driving on us to more, you know? And some of that's, you know, also made worse by grind culture, which is kind of the mainstream work culture that we're dealing with in the West now. But yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, the lazy thing. It's so, I see it right all the time.
When I woke up and realized, because I, in my first early jobs, I went from like entry level to management quickly. And I had no awareness of that even people saw the gift in me. Like, I was the most naive ever. Like, I look back and go, I now ascribe how naive I've been to like a divine intervention. Like, that naivete really paid off for me because I tried things and I experienced things and I met people and things like that that I wouldn't have done if I was thinking. I just did it because it felt good and it worked. So, but when I woke up and realized, I don't remember how old I was now, but when I realized that it's not because they're lazy, they can't see what I can see. Yeah. And it was an epiphany one day. I can't even remember what did it. I don't know if it just dropped in or something happened. But I remember going, oh, they're not lazy. They just can't see it. And it shifted everything for me, because then I'm like, okay, now I can master how the person, what they see and how they communicate, and I can match and mirror them. And then it's easier to have that communication as a leader, regardless whether it's a job responsibility, whether I'm working with a client, or whether it's just friends or my own life, you know. But wow, that's profound to realize that everyone doesn't see the world the same. In fact, none of us see the world the same. Our brains want us to think they do, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's well, cool.
Yeah. And so, you know, I mean, for me, so one of the kind of the key things for me in the work that I'm doing, right, is this, you know, burnout is a betrayal of our core essence, right? So we're uncovering and reconnecting to our core essence. In some cases, in most cases, we're reconnecting to at least some aspect of our core essence that we've lost from a very, very young age. We're kind of reclaiming that little girl inside of us. What we get to is that we've like sort of liberated and joyously unleashed our magic, our superwoman, our Wonder Woman that we always knew was there, that true potential that was sort of mysterious and elusive, like that kind of like, you know, thought you can't quite put together into words, the word that's at the tip of your tongue. And one of the key things that I see and teach around how to do this is to be able to get into this place of where all of our life is kind of led by, we're kind of like leading in our business or living in our life experience, where it's really fully coming from our feminine energy, our kind of receptive, inviting, allowing kind of connection to the universe, sort of ourselves as sort of a portal, a channel, a vessel for that to come through. And the joy of getting better and better at kind of how do we activate our portal and how do we embody it physically into our bodies through certain kinds of movement, et cetera. But once we kind of have that sort of, that we're sort of like in this feminine energy that is generating the precise wisdom we need to inform our action or our masculine energy, then our effort is always only our inspired and intelligent action. And so instead of kind of falling prey for the sort of 80-20 rule problem, which means, you know, 20% of your effort is what gets you 80% of your results, but the flip side of that is that 80% of your effort is getting you kind of almost sort of jack shit. Like, how do we, but the problem is, how do you discern how to ditch most of that 80%? And this is, I have found, the most true and supportive and nurturing and like returning to self experience, and self as also kind of the all. Like, that's really the groove, if you, you know, in terms of what I'm kind of, what I'm here to bring to people and what I see my clients get. It's beautiful every time. I actually have to share this because it was so exciting for me. Just before I got on the phone with you, Diane, I was on the phone with a client of mine who we're kind of about halfway through my program, and she's a younger entrepreneur who works in Latin America and has a social impact startup. Remember earlier in my story, my obsession from like, I don't know, however many now, 18, 19 years ago, about essentially sort of double bottom line businesses, right? And she's doing incredible things with this business. I'm not going to say much about the nature of it because her privacy is important and it doesn't really matter either. But she's, trust me, she's changing the paradigm. She's contributing to a new paradigm for the world, and she's changing people's lives who need it, and kind of rebalancing through what she's doing some of the horrible inequity that we have in the world today. And she's just an incredible, delightful human being who came in, initially was just like, I mean, she was just at the end of a rope. She was like dead. She was working 18 hours a day. She was just a mess, crying, you know, all of her brilliance was just like fading away. She was dealing with a board of directors made up of investors and someone who had kind of been an early sort of quasi co-founder, but really just more money in. Very controlling, though, having 50% of the shares. It was her first time. She didn't know how to protect herself by how to put things in writing, all that kind of stuff. Anyway, so she no longer had majority ownership of her company and wasn't really running it, right? Like, she was basically being directed around by the board that was a bunch of older men, hands-on. And sorry, men, but the venture capital world is like dominated by white men who maybe don't understand the experience of what's going on with folks, the lived experience of folks in Latin America. And certainly not of a younger female leader. And they were just, you know, awful. And so we've done the magic that we do in the program halfway there. And one of the results that's already happened for her is that she got this massive turnaround. She was ready to leave the whole business behind. And this is a business that's valued at $6.5 million in its last valuation from like a year ago. So it's a real business. This isn't like, you know, I'm still in my garage, you know. She's got a team of 35 people, et cetera. She was ready to walk away. And I kind of helped her figure out that, A, she was at that place. Was it okay to be at that place? How to kind of deal with being at that place? How to do boundaries with this board, folks? How to do work differently? Got the brain and spirit conditioning thing going. And she was really able to kind of immediately maximize my support around the kind of the energetic shifting and spiritual pieces. So what happened was her board like totally came around. They were like, she's gonna leave. She had given them some options and they had to choose some stuff and kind of laid her foot down. And she's done that many times before, the exact same discussion. And they've always just bulldozed over her. This time they were like, oh no, we need her. It's her vision. Without her, this fails and we lose a bunch of money and the whole thing's over. So they gave her all of the so-called co-founder shares without asking her to pay anything. And so essentially overnight, she tripled her net worth. And they basically gave her in terms of the valuation of the company, $2.6 million. I was like, holy shit, that's awesome. I'm sorry for those of you who don't like the cursing. I can't help it. Holy mackerel, that's awesome. Like, that's incredible. Mm-hmm. I was talking to her and she still couldn't even like make it real. So we were both basically just trying to anchor it in her body. So fantastic. And of course, immediately just in case some of you are like, oh, now she's all set, she's all done. Like, it's not over, because immediately what's happened for her is that the old voices came back in, the ones that we banished, that were like, oh, you can't do this. Oh, you're going to fail. Oh, you're not big enough for this. And really what we realized was this was just the fear around like, wait, I was going to like escape, but actually realizing that she's free to make the choices all the time, every moment, and that she's in this process of creating for herself and owning for herself a radical empowerment, a radical sovereignty over her life that requires also a beautiful form of radical accountability. You know, every moment we get to decide. We get to decide right now. I decide right now that it's going to be this way. I decided right now that I'm going to do this. And it's just time, you know, external circumstances catching up with our decision and continuing to move forward. So what do you, you know, I think sort of the open-ended rhetorical question is, what are you, you're deciding right now, even if you think you're not, what are you deciding? What is that story or rule that you've chosen for yourself that is not helping you? Why is it there for you? What do you believe that you get to have or do as a result of that limiting belief or story? And how could you flip it? So I would hope that might be potentially inspirational for some folks who are struggling.
Oh, I'm sure it is, because I think that it applies to people even if they don't know it. Like, I think a lot of your words have a lot of truth in them, and they're matter of fact kind of to us because we kind of live this. And other people, I'm sure, are going to hear your words and go, oh, wow. And some people will even have to replay it because it's so profound for them. And which is the whole reason why I asked you to be on the show, because I think it's vital and important that we start waking up, like all of humanity. And and we coming out of the trance, I call it. And when I met you, I'm like, okay, this is somebody who gets all these things already. And it's so important. And I'm really, really excited that you work primarily, if not all, with women, because I think that a woman who's lived it can help another woman live it in a way that has a little edge of power in it, a little bit of something to it. And I sail boats with almost all men, and most of my world is around mostly men, except in certain areas of it. So I love the balance of it all. And at the same time, I think sometimes there's something very poignant about the way you've put together this amazing gift that you're bringing the world.
I have
some other cool questions that are a little bit divergent, but a little bit fun too. What is your favorite food to eat?
That is a really good question. What is my favorite food to eat? I'm going to give a beverage and a food. My favorite beverage is a particular tea by Yogi Tea. That's a green tea kombucha that I like to combine with nettle seed, just like bulk organic nettle seed. And I just love that. That's like the whole first part of my day is me with that cup of tea going all the time, and I keep the kettle hot. And then my favorite food probably, I don't know if it's my favorite food, because it's actually just my more common food, is eggs. I eat a lot of eggs. I love eggs. I don't eat a lot of red meat or any of that. I tend to stick with either white meat or fish when I'm eating any kind of actual critter being that has been killed for me to eat, which I take seriously. I try to give thanks for everything that I'm eating when I'm eating it. One of the kind of questions I like to ask myself and that I like to pose to others is, how would I treat myself if I believed I was a sacred being? And one of the things that is really critical for that is, what am I choosing to put in my body? And I've had such a like a layered journey, like it's been a like, you know, many steps up with many steps backwards sometimes it's two steps forward, three steps back, right? But you know, kind of like eventually kind of going up on this where I can sort of feel good about it. Right now, I love discovering new food, and I like discovering, I particularly love when I can discover a really awesome, amazing restaurant that makes, like I'm not great at making really cool, interesting vegan food, but I really like it when I find it. I have a really limited diet by choice, so I don't eat any soy, which is, you know, challenging in the vegan diet world occasionally. I also don't eat dairy or gluten or alcohol or added sugar or legumes, just in case anybody's going to ask that question. And so like there's a restaurant in Seattle called Plum Bistro that I'm just going to make like a pitch for, even though I'm not related to them in any way. It's like a transformational experience to eat there. Recently, I discovered a product that is hard for me to get, like desserts that I like that don't make me feel like I'm hurting my body because of sugar. So usually I stick to fruits. But every now and then I'll find something that's pre-made that's I think is really great. And I do stay away from processed foods like this, but sometimes I'll go for it. Daiya, the company Daiya, D-A-I-Y-A, makes this new thing that I just discovered. Maybe it's not new. I just found it finally. It's in my store. Basically a cheesecake, like New York style cheesecake that tastes fantastic. That is dairy, gluten, soy free, maybe some other things too, and very reasonable on tiny bits of sugar and carbs in it. And I never thought I would ever have the experience again of that like mouthfeel of cheesecake and the taste of it. And so that's been like a huge gift to me just like a week ago.
Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect. So are you willing to share with us a memorable experience from your travels in life? Something that stands out as a memory that you go, wow, that was really cool.
I'm gonna go internal on this one and say that the really cool, two really cool experiences internally were first when I was, my daughter's 19, just to give you a time scale. When I was pregnant with my daughter, about 4 months along, I had a very like clear sense of received information in a way that was really the first time I was aware of it as received information versus something that I thought I was generating on my own, that her name was Emily already. And I was like, oh, Emily wasn't even on her list. Interesting. I don't know if I really like Emily. You know, of course I love Emily now. It's my daughter's name. And her dad, we're not married now, but her dad and I were talking about it and I told him and he was like, oh, great. So psychic mom trumps dad. I don't get a vote now. And I was like, oh, that's not what I meant. But it was just pretty funny. And that was a really cool kind of awakening experience for me, as becoming a mom was for me, as I know it is for many, many women. And then a few years later, like 3 or 4 years later, sitting by the side of the road and just suddenly actually pulling over to the side of the road because I was having like a clear, immediate, visceral experience of God, divine, Buddha, Christ, love, all of the things like washing over me and in me in a way that I can't even explain. Occasionally I try to write poetry to kind of get some of this stuff down because I do believe that even with poetry, it's hard because words are like using a hammer to split an atom. You know, the tool can be so crude, but it's what we got, you know, and I love words. So those are kind of internal. I would say like my biggest, most favorite kind of external experience was the first time that we launched the Science of Hope Conference in my former role as running that foundation that I mentioned. And I was super excited. Like I was super micro involved. I love designing magical gatherings. It's like my jam. It's my beautiful thing. And I really put so much of my heart and energy and soul and love into how we design this beautiful, amazing space for everyone to kind of come, who does this incredibly important work, to come and feel loved and supported, and that they can rest in our arms for these 2 days and that they can feel uplifted while also getting kind of what their brains and their bosses think they need around like learning and stuff like that. I was working with a spiritual mentor who's been in my life for a long time. And there were many details and beautiful things we put together in terms of who we got from all over the world to come and teach and bring their wisdom. And she said to me, okay, that's all done now. You've done everything you need to do for that. Your only job now is to show up in as shiny and sparkly a place as you can in your energy, as you're willing to allow yourself to show up, be as big and shiny as you can. And nothing else matters, because when you do that from this place that you're capable of doing it, it will let everybody else have permission to be as shiny as they can be. And that's what they need. And I was like weeping over this vision of all these people being able to show up in this shiny, beautiful place. And it changed the whole experience for me, because instead of worrying about what am I going to say on stage, what am I going to say to these people, I just was like, boom, I got up. I made a playlist that was like running the whole time that people were like, oh my God, it's my music, it's my jam. People were moving. I was on stage cracking jokes. I think I might've dropped the F-bomb. I had board members in the room who I'm sure were scandalized. People loved it. People were so dedicated to that and they had the best time. And that's what mattered to me, was that they really felt like somebody gets me. Oh, wait a minute, that's your podcast. I was like a mini Diane for 2 days, basically. And it was awesome. And then I was like, this is what I'm supposed to do. And everything else that I choose to do is somehow this. So yeah. How's that?
I love it. I love the sparkly part.
Thank you for giving me that opportunity to kind of revisit those memories, because what a joy.
Oh, you're very welcome. So is there anything on your heart that you would like to share with anybody or everybody before we close the show? And clearly there is so much more to talk about. So I'm going to put you on the spot and invite you back for a second interview. So,
oh my God, I would love that. I would love that. Yes. Let's ask people to ask questions, like, and we can come in and do the questions or suggest topics or something. That would be awesome. Anything. I don't care.
Okay, I'm going to put that out and ask for questions and topics and things. And there's so much more. And I think that would be really powerful. So you've said yes. Thank you so much. And so
I'm on the spot now. She's got me on record.
That's right. And so is there anything that you would like to say now before we start up again at another time that you're led to say?
Yes. Yes, there is. I do. Yes. I want to say that we are in a time in our realm where we are moving towards kind of an up-leveling, an ascension, a freedom, and kind of this, many of our spirits are moved in this in various different ways and at different levels and drawn forward. And right now, the phase that we are in requires us to build our strong foundations, to build them as clear and as strong and as streamlined as possible, in whatever way that means to us, like foundation for your business, foundation for your life, or kind of how you are living your life, or, you know, any and all of the things, so that as we move into kind of the beginning of the next phase next year, where things really open and become possible for you, for all of us, you have that solid foundation so that everything and anything that you put effort into can expand from strength and can be true and real and take roots and grow and not end up getting like a house of cards that tumbles away in the breeze. That's what I want to say to people. And I want to say, choose your bigness. Choose your bigness. It is yours. It is always there. You are infinite. You are huge. Choose it. And if it freaks you out and you need to figure out how to play big without losing your mind, you know where to find me.
Thank you, Melanie. You have been listening to Melanie Gillespie, the most amazing kick-ass person. I'm sure you all have related to that already. So thank you very much, Melanie, for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Diane. It was my incredible pleasure. I love it. I can't wait for more.
Oh, this was great. I have goosebumps. And so remember, everybody, as you replay this episode and you think about all the powerful words Melanie just shared, that if you keep your face to the sun, the shadows always fall behind you, and you are a rock star here on purpose with a purpose. It's time to show up and know that you are here with a mighty, mighty calling, and the world needs you. So go out there and play big. Mm. And until next time, be well.
Thank you for listening. I trust you gained some valuable inspiration and information. Please join me and other visionaries in the Someone Gets Me Facebook group. Or for more information on my services and additional episodes, visit someonegetsme.com. Again, thanks for listening.